This is a meeting at Tom Camarella's house on the 16th of June, 2003. Present are Kwasi Nkrumah, Leslie Radford, Carl Gunther, Tom Irwin, Harrison Weil, Marie, I don't know Marie's last name, Dave Adelson, Rafael Renteria, Lorraine Mirza, John Winger, and Farah Davari.
Proposing that we set an agenda. Did anybody want to put on that agenda an overview of not just the present major issues, but you know, sort of some background on how the whole bylaws thing developed?
I thought that's what David was asking.
There are only two major issues,
just
in my view.
Spend a few minutes and write down the items to be discussed. Focusing on education.
Some people just want to pass them as they are and think they're good enough. But there are two camps that are that say that they're not good enough yet. One of them has to do with diversity language, with remedies to achieve diversity. Another issue has to do with just what I call democracy issues, trouble with the bylaws. For example, there's the amendment process just isn't going to work. The open meeting.
Requirement has a gigantic loophole.
There's a bunch of those things. So basically, two classes of issues: the diversity issues and the democracy issue. And those two camps have been opposing the immediate ratification of the bylaws.
She didn't mean anything like that.
Okay.
Okay. Because I said it, I don't want to make any sort of accusation.
Could we have one meeting?
Yeah.
Maybe it would help to have one chair.
Two laps
for the Ming and Kwasi and
Vice
Chair.
I'm suggesting that Tom do it.
We need a chair here.
And the main reason I'm suggesting that, frankly, is my sleep schedule is way off. I'm too tired to try to chair the meeting. So go, Tom.
We're getting an overview, right? I'm getting an overview.
But I can do you one better conversation, Carl. We should turn it over to Tom now.
Okay, I can do you one better, because my mother is in the hospital, and I got an hour and 20 minutes sleep last night. So I'll give this to anyone. I mean, David, I would very much like to see you do it.
I'll do it if people want me to do it.
Carl.
I'll share it if you like.
It should be.
Carl's not on the board, is he?
He's been away from bylaw for 2 months.
I've been away from bylaw for 2 months, right? I mean, in terms of content, I'm handicapped in that regard.
The chair has nothing to do with content.
Please,
exactly. I know.
Dave's not on the lab either.
That's why I said I would do it.
Could do it as well. I'm just thinking the bylaw subcommittee is more for months too. Should be involved in the process.
Well, that's why I asked Kwasi first.
But I think the chair is basically a neutral function.
Fine, let's do it. We got to get going here.
Here is neutral? That's
well, actually, nobody here is neutral. You got to understand that.
Needs to be.
And we're fools if we think we are. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Does anyone have a copy of the bylaws? Can we just start reading them?
If you try reading the bylaws, we will not get out of here until tomorrow afternoon.
I'd like to suggest that I spend 10 to 15 minutes.
I was told it was just draft A and B, which is not the same.
How we got to this point, and what were the issues that triggered the need to rewrite bylaws in the first place. Also, issues about the status of the settlement itself. What is that? There's a lot of confusion and misstatement about it. For example, you'll hear people saying, the judge has ordered so-and-so. The judge ordered nothing. It was an agreement between parties that the judge signed off on.
Now, these are only suggestions of don't go through it now. These are suggestions of agenda items. Anyone else have an agenda item other than a 10-minute overview by Dave?
Hot issues.
Yeah. And then we can vote on these, all right?
No. Why is this a vote? I thought this is just an educational meeting.
Okay. No, what I'm saying is you can decide which ones we want to do first and second. Okay,
right.
Folks?
No. Understood.
You
make
a proposal and nobody objects.
All right.
Let's go with it.
Agenda. Okay.
Any other agenda items?
Well, I suggest that we outline some hot issues and order them. I think the obvious hot issues have to do with the differences in draft A and draft B around diversity. And I would suggest that we have a 5 to 10 minute presentation on each side of that question.
If somebody has not familiar with the bylaws at first, they need to be familiar with what's in them first. Not what your opinion or my opinion is. This is not... Then I'm just going to leave because I'm wasting my time.
Lorraine, please, what is needed here is people not to get upset. We're all adults.
This
we're
is not
attempting
a propaganda session or a debating session. It's supposed to be an invitation.
Right. Well...
And
she
needs to get an overview on the bylaws.
That's all she wants.
I'm not here to...
My dear, I will put up anything you say. It's an open floor here.
The,
there's nobody pushing anything here.
No.
This is my expectation. I expect, when I came here, I expect that there are people that have been on these committees for a long time who are very knowledgeable on the bylaws. And since I am the new kid on the block, I expect those people with the knowledge and the understanding to give us, the new kid, an overview on the bylaws. Not that I am voting on anything, not that I have an opinion one way or the other, that I would learn something. I would walk out of these doors with an understanding of at least what are the major issues.
All right. The problem here is that each one of the knowledgeable persons, and I'm included in this, has a point of view. And that's going to have
that's
to
okay.
be all right. So that the four people that have a lot of information, you're going to get probably four sides of stuff, and I can't help that. I don't know how else to work with that. Let's go around this way. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to suggest that we have a 5 or 10 minute presentation on the pros on somebody's pro B and somebody's pro A. With no debate back and forth, but the ability for people to ask questions of that person without crosstalk between the two sides.
That makes it the thing that she's trying to avoid.
I think this gentleman here was giving me a fairly good overview.
I'm trying to give you an overview.
I'm going to do Carl, and then I'm going to do Quasi. Go ahead.
I suggest that we choose one person initially to give an overview of bylaws, how we got to here, as Dave suggested, but to let any person, by raising their hand and bringing it to the attention of the chair, interrupt that presentation to put forward a point of information or a correction or an alternative point of view.
That's going to be
cacophonous. Did you get that, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry,
you're right.
I'm saying we should go with somebody who can give an overview of the bylaws. Just choose one person to do that, but if anyone disagrees with what's being said, and not just on little things, but I mean if it's something that's significant that you think is being misrepresented or additional information needs to be put in, raise your hand. You as the chair will recognize that person in the middle of that presentation, and that person will issue their correction, and then the presentation will continue. That's my
I think it should go after the presentation, whatever 10 minutes that is. Allow them to finish, and then we come back.
Then we'll have to choose multiple people, and each one will give a full presentation uninterrupted. Is that right?
No, well, they can have their question. I have no problem with, after the 10-minute presentation, then somebody asking their question.
Okay.
There's nothing. But it breaks the continuity when people keep on asking questions. If somebody's going to have the ability to do this in 10 minutes, it's very difficult.
Okay, so
and I want to give them that opportunity. Quasi.
Presentation and rebuttal.
I mean, I can understand people's frustration with the fact that there can't simply be one presentation, one view on it. The problem is...
Gentlemen, there's chairs right behind Harrison. I don't know why he's on the floor.
As Tom and several other people have said, it's kind of inevitable. And actually, part of getting the overview for real is you do need to hear the different perspectives that people have on the critical questions. Those are the questions that are unresolved, and those are the questions that we're all going to have to do quite a bit of thinking about. I think it's an advantage if, with the different views in the room, people can hear the perspectives of people coming from different positions on specific questions, because that'll give you something of a head start once we really get into the discussion. And going through the documents, listening to what people have to say, and then going through the documents yourself is really just what you have to do. It is work.
May I speak?
Just a second. We've finished here. So John, oh, excuse me, Farah and John, or Vajan and Farah, I couldn't see which one, so.
You have to go sometime.
I just wanted to suggest that after David gives his overview verdict, because he's been on the DLCs, and he's been on this whole process as far as the national board, he also gives an overview of the last 1.5 months, because, you know, that gives us a lot of insight, and then we could go from there.
So that could be renamed where we are in the process.
In the the actual, you know, because by March there was one problem, and that problem he's been part of discussing it on the committee for since.
What problem are you referring to?
DLC, the Diversity Language Committee. He was on the Diversity Language Committee, and he's been working it, so I think he would give it overview of the Diversity and Language Committee from March on, what happened, and then we go on to the discussions.
I have some ability to do abstraction and also to teach, and I started out, and Marie apparently liked what I was doing. I think I can give that top level where we are. To get up to speed quickly. Everybody else here has quite a bit of background, so I would like to put that at the beginning, because she's here, she's got an hour, and she's already stated that this was useful.
Right.
Okay. So I'd like to go first.
Harrison?
It just seems that I'd like to see a balance here, that we not have people from one point of view presenting most of the time. So I think rather than have one person presenting, there should be several. So I think we should vote between the different alternatives.
Okay, I'm going to offer myself as one of those also.
That's someone who will present an overview, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the vote for? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, it seems like one alternative is we have one presenter with questions and answers, and another alternative is we have a number of people giving overviews.
Well, the overviews will be very useful.
I would think any of the overviews are going to be Q&A after. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I would think so.
I think I'd like to propose an alternative. I think that we should just allot people a certain amount of time each to present what they think is important about what's going on right now.
Could we open around the thing.
So that basically...
Sure, just open the window.
We can alternate between people who are or thought to be on
open the blind
different
first,
sides
please.
Of particular issues. So that we don't... I mean, we could spend all night arguing about which topic we're going to have.
Right.
People will prioritize what's most important to them and say it.
Okay, I propose we do Wenger, Adelson, Fertig, and Harrison, if he wants to give one. Anybody else who...
Do you want to give your overview?
Or do you want to specifically specialize in the area of diversity?
Well, specialize in the area of diversity, but what David was just suggesting, I think, is apropos that people speak to what is most important to them. And then we just go around the room.
We're getting an interruption. Tom's being interrupted, so... Does anybody object to that idea? Okay, you're back.
Yeah, I would like to give the historical background for why we're doing bylaws at all first.
And what bylaw means.
The general concept, Tom, is that we're going to go one person at a time, all the people who feel that they really have something to say on this, put them in a list, everybody gets 10 minutes each, and they give what they think are the most salient points about the whole bylaws process, big picture, overview, narrowing in on areas of specialization if they want to, you know, have a certain area. And then, you know, we have Q&A either after each presentation or after the whole thing. I'd say after the whole thing would be best.
Okay, I'd make one modification. Dave, because of his position, and he's also part of the lab regarding bylaws, we made a special thing for that. I'm happy to give him his 10 minutes overview. However, all the rest, I think we should be 5 minutes, and then we can follow each one by Q&A, because each person doesn't need 10 minutes, okay? So let's start out that way. We can always do more after. You know, we can say what we need.
And if somebody who has run out of their 5 minutes and requests more time, we'll just have a show of hands as to how many people want to give that person more time. How's that?
Well, look, one thing that would be extremely helpful, folks, is that if we're going to be a functioning board and we call a meeting at 7:30 and we start at 8 o'clock, that's a problem. If you say it's supposed to be 5 minutes and you go on to 10 or 15, that's a problem. How do you want to handle this? Do you guys want to function or do you want to just... I don't understand.
I think we have consensus, so maybe we should start. Yeah, okay. Do we have consensus?
I believe we do.
All except for one thing. I think that 5 minutes is good. I'd like to see Dave try to squeeze this into 5 to 7 minutes, because if he goes for 10, it's going to be almost 8:30 in the
real time. Only 5 minutes.
I'll go as fast as I can.
Okay. Start. Come on up here.
I'll just come up here.
Is this all being taped?
Yes.
You ready?
Should I put this on? Oh, he's taping the whole thing? Okay.
So, Marie, since most everyone else here has heard a lot of the scenario, I'll probably be looking at you mostly, directing my comments to you. But basically, just to give you background, I joined the board in 1996 after having been a volunteer in the summer of 95, and I'd been a listener for several years before that, and because I work in a laboratory and listen to radio all day, it was easy to detect that there were big changes in programming happening. And I didn't learn until later that a lot of those big changes had to do with changes that were being made throughout non-commercial broadcasting, throughout the community radio movement. And it was based on a model of increasing audience by target market programming. But it wasn't just, it was basically putting non-commercial radio on a commercial standard. And the way it was done at stations around the country was to get hold of the governing boards of stations. Now, at a lot of community radio stations, the way things went at the station was basically determined by some sort of balancing between management and staff at the stations. And there were a lot of heavily volunteer stations in the community radio movement. And the argument put forth by what was originally called the Blueprint Project and then the Healthy Station Project, which got a lot of funding from CPB, is that the increased listenership by increasing the amount of time spent listening of a target audience. And the way you do that is by having professional programmers and predictable program schedules. So not a crazy quilt schedule of community members all broadcasting on their particular issues, but more regularized and more quote, professional model of programming. And the way it was done administratively was to get control of those boards and to basically get rid of a lot of volunteer programmers in favor of paid programmers to raise the amount of money that the stations made. And most everywhere it happened, you know, the paid programmers and the people who are remaining were down for the program because they were getting more time, more space, more money. And you'd have people objecting to the change without the consent of the listenership. But very often those objections were ineffective. So at Pacifica, what started to happen was this process was taking over at all the stations, and the number of people, it was different at each of the stations, but it was pretty clear that it was a consistent process. And it was being done by getting the board to go along with changes that the executive was imposing. So the executive director hired the managers, and the managers were removing people and changing program formats. So, for example, at our station, we lost monthly shows. In the move to daily and weekly shows, we lost the community calendar. And particularly in L.A., one of the things that happened was the Pan-Africanist and Afrocentric program was specifically targeted around claims of anti-Semitism directed to two people in particular, Kwaku Person-Lin and Didon Kamathi. But the upshot of all of that was that essentially all the Pan-Africanist programmers, Afrocentric programmers, were removed. And so despite the later claim by the board some years later that they were trying to increase the diversity of the stations, at KPFK there were no people of color broadcasting public affairs drive-time programming in 2000. And so in any case, part of the way this got done was through a change in bylaws. Prior to 1997, two-thirds of the national board was elected by the local boards. So there were 15 seats on the board. Five of those were at-large seats, and then two each for each of the station local boards were elected to the national board. And in 1997, they first tried to change. 1996,
they hired the first ever PR director for Pacifica, and he was involved in an effort to sell changes in bylaws. No, he might have been hired in early 97. But anyhow, in June of 97, they tried to change the bylaws to reduce the number of national board members who would be elected by the local boards, and to increase the number of board members that the national board itself could select. And so basically it was an attempt by the national board to get control of its own membership. Now, there was a lot of question at the time about what was really behind it, but one of the things that was thought to be behind it was a desire on the part of some members of the national board to sell one of the station licenses. The station licenses, particularly in the wake of the Telecommunications Act of 96, shot up in value. So, for example, WBAI estimated to be worth around $200 million. In an article in 1995 or 6, I think the San Francisco Examiner estimated the number for Berkeley at $60 million, but it was probably more like double that, given what station licenses were doing. So the idea was, well, if you liquidate one of the station licenses, then you can fund the plan that was codified in their strategic five-year plan. The problem was that they weren't coming correct or being truthful, many of us felt, and they were to many of the people in the network, and they were closing meetings in violation of CPB regulations, and there were a lot of lies being told that people were trying to so it really looked like the bum's rush. And so there was an attempt to get the word out to the listenership that these kind of heavy changes were going on, but anytime anybody tried to say anything about it, they got removed from the radio station. And so in 97, there was a big hubbub at the June meeting, and they delayed this change in bylaws where they were going to reduce national local board input, and they delayed it to the fall of 97. And in the fall of 97, they again, due to pressure, they backed off that change, but they did change the bylaws in a critical way. They said that local boards, they changed the language of the bylaws to say that local boards nominate board members, not elect. And the reason that's important is because California law says that if you elect a director, you're a member of a foundation, whether or not it's a membership foundation. And those voting rights can't be taken away from you without consent of that class of members. But nobody knew that at the time. What was clear was they were going through a bunch of efforts to try and change their control of the membership of the board. At the same time they did that and backed off their plan to reduce the number of lab members who were sent to the national board by their lab, they increased the number of at-large seats from 5 to 9. So they gave themselves control of 9/19 of the board, whereas before that they'd only had a third. Then a year later, then that following April, they did something where they had thrown out the local board bylaws, and in that, March 1st of 98, they passed policies that governed local boards that said that staff members on local boards no longer had a vote on those local boards. Now, the only vote that mattered for staff was the vote for national board members. So it again looked like they were trying to rig the deck. So I, at this time, Tom was around, Tom Irwin, some of the other folks were around and very concerned about all this. They had actually sponsored a lawyer to go to D.C. when they tried to change the bylaws the first time. I actually went to a judge and asked them, I told him what was going on. He gave me a legal intern. The summer of 98, we went through Corporations Code and found this feature that you cannot remove the voting rights of people without their consent. So we wanted to bring a suit on behalf of staff members who had their voting rights removed. But there wasn't a whole lot of an idea that you could fund such a suit or a whole lot of force behind that. Well, it turned out in the fall they came back and they solicited an opinion from the CPB, the governing board did, or the executive director, and they said, are our bylaws in violation of the Communications Act or any of Corporation for Public Broadcasting regulations? And they came back and they said, well, yes, we think it is a conflict for members to sit both on the local board and on the national board, and that would violate features of the Communications Act that says they should be separate bodies. In fact, there should be separate bodies so that the advisory boards had autonomy. So on the basis of that opinion, they got the national board to agree to change its bylaws again, and this time they changed the bylaws so that the national board elected its entire membership. So the national board basically said, it's our foundation. We're kicking everybody else out. which was sort of the last administrative step in a process of transforming all of Pacifica according to the goal of a few key people up at the national board. And again, a lot of this had been done through a lot of secrecy, closed meetings, distortions, blah, 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 blah. And different people argued about what was motivating it, whether it's politics or money or what have you. But the key point was that people, that most of the stakeholders in Pacifica had no leverage and no say. So we brought suit, and then shortly after that, after they changed the bylaws, they fired a very popular manager in Berkeley. The Berkeley programmers resisted. There was a lockout at KPFA, and we filed our suit that July. And the suit basically said that they moved illegally and removing our voting rights. Subsequent to that, Carol Spooner brought a suit on behalf of the people of the state of California, arguing that they were in violation of their corporate
charter.
Both they also had the same cause of action, but some other issues. And I'm going fast here, so I'm condensing a whole lot. Additionally, one group of directors of the board of directors filed suit again for violation of process at the national board level. There was an executive committee that was doing a lot of things that the whole board should have had access to, saying they were closing meetings, all the same stuff. A little bit after that, the second group of directors that were named in all the other suits filed a, what's the technical term?
Cross complaint,
where they aligned themselves. So there were four groups. There was local boards, local advisory boards suing. There was the Attorney General suing.
Suing under the authority of the Attorney General.
Right, with Carol Spooner at the head of that suit. There were two groups of directors, one in a suit and the other in a cross complaint. Okay. So,
excuse me, no problem with any content. I just wanted a time check. It's 8:30. Just so everybody knows.
Okay, I'll go for a couple more minutes.
Maybe you should focus a little more on things that impact on the present bylaws.
I think I am. Maybe we have a different idea about that.
The
result of that was, and while this was going on, we were getting driven into quite a bit of debt by a lot of food spending of the existing board. Long story short, it ended with a settlement. And you'll hear a lot of people of the lawsuit, and you'll hear a lot of people say that the judge mandated this settlement, or the judges, you know, told us we have to do anything, and that's not the case. The parties met. The four suits were consolidated, so we had a single group that was negotiating this with the defendant directors. And the agreement that came out of it, the legal settlement, was an agreement among all parties negotiated by us and just signed off on by the judge. And it basically said that we had to write new bylaws that provided for the election of boards by subscribers, of local boards by subscribers within a year of the settlement. And then 3 months after that, there would be a new national board elected by those elected local boards. The question of how the national board would be elected by the local boards was left unstated and left to be worked out in that whole process. One of the things the lab plaintiffs fought for was that decision by the national board, which has to be passed by a two-thirds vote of the national board, had to be approved by at least three of the five local boards, so that it wouldn't be the same thing. Of the interim national board. So it wouldn't be the same thing where you get this disjunction of interest between this group up here and everybody else down there, and they tell us what was good for us. So that required some consent. The national board that was formed, the interim board, was formed from three sectors. A third of the board was elected by the local boards, and each board elected one, or chose one person. Actually, each chair chose one person from their local board. The defendant directors got five seats, and the plaintiff directors got five seats. So there were three sections of that. And so that brings us to now, where we're trying to get these bylaws passed so that we can get elected boards, so that we can seat a permanent board. And I think that's a quick thumbnail sketch. If there's anything in particular in that rapid-fire story you want to ask me?
Maybe later.
Okay.
Bertie, you're next. Just so everybody knows, there's a restroom right back here, and if you want Altoids, I got them.
Here, my harmonica.
So I guess to orient where we are in the bylaws, to relate where that took us and to where we are now in the bylaws, would it be fair to say that the national board is basically split amongst a bunch of different interests because the former defendants named a third of the board. That left a whole lot of people on there who, frankly, had different ideas in mind, I believe, in terms of the future of Pacifica, as compared to those of us who, as diverse as we are in what we want and think and do, have a relatively similar focus on Pacifica as a community-based radio network. Others might, who knows what their motives are. But the point is, there's been a lot of energy over the last year and a half since the settlement was entered, generated to try to rebuild the foundation. And there's been a lot of resistance from a lot of different levels. And there's been a lot of conflict within those of us who are seeking more or less the same thing as well. The point being that the years leading up to the settlement, there were infiltrators, moles, provocateurs. And frankly, I think this explains to some degree a lot of the chaos that has arisen. Of course, what also explains it is that the left is naturally fractious. So for the last year and a half, we have been tussling and pulling and prodding and arguing and trying to figure out how to create a whole new governance that would be accountable to the listeners. And people have different theories about how best to do that, obviously. But what was fundamental is that there will be elections. And the current drafts, in fact, the last of the many drafts, with a few significant exceptions, have always had the model whereby the local signal area subscribers, with exceptions, those that, because of whatever reason they feel they're not able to technically qualify as a subscriber, but they want to be a subscriber nonetheless. They haven't got the $25 or the 3 hours to put in. So whatever, they want to be a voter, okay, they can be a voter under certain circumstances. But they would elect the local board. That the local board would or would not include staff. That was a controversial issue. That then the local boards would elect the national board has been, frankly, the most prevalent construct, at least amongst the national board and most of the local board members. But there's been controversy on that. Of course, the local committee had a lot of people in it that were against that. They wanted a direct election of national board members. And there were a lot of people who were against staff representation on the board as well. As Dave Adelson indicated previously, the staff had had votes and membership on the local board, which had been taken away by the national board. And so that's under many of the proposals currently pending, or all the proposals currently on the table for the national board. Staff membership is one quarter of both local and national bodies. So in any event, there were meetings, there were thousands and thousands of hours expended by hundreds, if not thousands, of people discussing the various proposals around the various signal areas. That's been boiled down till today. We have basically two proposals. There's a lot of stuff leading up to it. There's a lot of issues that a lot of us would like to revisit. There's a lot of issues that some of us feel that we've had to go to a great deal to compromise, and probably a lot of us have felt that we would not compromise on. But nonetheless, the two proposals that we have on the table are fundamentally identical in many respects. Where they differ primarily relate to the diversity language. As you've no doubt heard, there are basically, there's a feeling amongst many that Pacifica, given its limited history in elections, given its apparent lack of diversity, although it depends on what signal area you're looking at, and there's an argument about whether or not we're diverse, that in order for us to have a truly representative governing system, it needs to incorporate the broadest and most representative diverse group within that signal area to ensure that the programming is similarly informed through that diversity so that the membership, again, maintains its diversity and growth and really truly represents the signal area in the context of its diversity. But remember, Pacifica has a mission. It is not a community radio station, in my view. It is a mission-based radio station that speaks through and to the community. But if it were to truly represent the community, as its founder, Blue Hill, once noted, then it would be in favor of war. So it can't really be representative of the community's ideology. But it can and should be relatively representative of a community culturally, because it needs to speak through that in order to get its message out. In any event, one extreme, and I'll characterize them polarity, but there's a lot of people in various ways in between these polarities. But the extremes are one in one end, trust the electorate, we'll take care of it, we'll elect a nice diverse body, you don't have to make any efforts to worry about diversity. It will happen on the natch because we're all progressive folks. At the other end of the spectrum, looks upon that at the very other end of the spectrum as being not credible, that in order to ensure any kind of diversity, steps need to be taken to guarantee that people who are from uncharacteristically or historically underrepresented communities would then have to be somehow selected and placed on the board. Vote getters, but nonetheless, people that didn't get elected would then have to be brought in and put on the board to compensate for the anticipated lack of diversity. Now, those are two extremes. There's a lot of people that say, well, in between, there's probably other steps that can be taken, other mechanisms that can be employed, because at one extreme, you are basically giving somebody or denying them the opportunity to participate in a nonprofit public benefit corporation. The denial or granting of participation in that context is based purely on their race, creed, national origin, whatever the category deemed to be necessary to have included. And that's clearly illegal. In my view, I'm a civil rights lawyer of 16 years. That's clearly illegal. There's a lot of debate about that, but that's my point of view and the point of view of a lot of lawyers. So then what less can you do to nonetheless ensure, make most likely diversity without really basing a person's participation on race, creed, national origin, age, disability, whatever? And so a lot of the proposals that were brought up were aimed at trying to maximize the likelihood of diversity and participation while minimizing, frankly, what a lot of people felt would be crippling litigation. The lawyers that we consulted all said that people are going to sue you if you do engage in actual forced set-aside seats because there are entities that are going around the country suing people for this shit. There's lawsuits pending, and there's a Supreme Court case coming out. Some argue that it's not germane to this type of structure, such as I would argue. But nonetheless, the point is that the issue is diversity. There's some other factors, and there's some other issues in the bylaws that relate to things that are controversial. But the main thing is...
It worked 20 minutes now.
I understand.
The main thing is that the current setup would create... All the proposals have what's called the committees of inclusion. Many of you have read about the committees of inclusion. In the B model, which has been drafted, that was on the table for the National Board in March in Los Angeles. And it was accepted, all but the issues relating to diversity. At that stage, the Diversity Language Committee was created to have representatives from each of the single areas to sit down and work out language that the National Board could accept and that the local boards could accept. This committee... was somewhat unusual in the Pacifica Committee in that it was even more dysfunctional than most, frankly. And nonetheless, it did come up with some language. However, I spoke to Diallo Cantambu, the author of the Committees of Inclusion language, and I pointed out to him how the language had since been changed, and he was blown away and recognized that he could not accept the A language as it's currently written. That's a level of computer. Here's a guy that wrote the language. The committee spent literally 30 hours or more in phone calls, as well as many hours outside of that, in drafting language and proposing stuff and going back and forth over stuff and conducting votes and discussion. And even then, the outcome of it now is in question because the author of the initial Committees of Inclusion proposal found that there had been confusion and alterations of the language. In any event,
can you speak to time frame and mechanics?
Yeah. We have in the settlement a 15-month window. Thank you. A 15-month window to write the bylaws, adopt them, elect the local boards, elect the national boards. That would have been March of this year. In March of this year, we've been done. In December, the National Board recognized we were going to get there. So we applied to the court for an extension of time. We only asked for June 30th. We have until June 30th to have done all of this, adopted the bylaws, elected local boards, seated the national board. It's unlikely that's going to happen within the next week and a half. So we're going to have to, if we don't pass the bylaws and start this, then I'm going to be going in front of Judge Sabra, the settlement judge, on June 27th, because he's out of town June 30th, and try to explain to him why we should be given more time. That's the issue that we face now. So we've got an A draft and a B draft. The B draft has no mechanical remedies. The A draft has mechanical remedies whereby the committees of inclusion would define what categories existed, what our demographics were in the signal area within those categories. They would then assess, in the A model, they would assess the candidate pool for the local boards and determine whether or not they were sufficiently diverse. And then they might argue no, or they might trigger and say, no, you've got to have an extension of 2 weeks. Up to two-week extensions may be had. To maintain the nomination pool, you'll get all this paper. Keep the nomination pool open so we can go out and try to get more diverse candidates. That's inoffensive. There's nothing illegal about that, and that's fine. But then the election happens. At that juncture, the A model basically says that the Committee of Inclusion, having decided what categories it would measure, having decided what the demographics are based on all the data available, governmental, organizational, academic, and so forth, we then decide of the election outcome which categories it deems were underrepresented based on its assessment. It could then decide which of the highest vote getters, or which categories in any event, would then be plugged into the board up to 5 additional seats each election in order to mechanically cure the anticipated lack of diversity on the national, on the local board. Then, with that local board, which then would range from 24 to 29 people, because you could add 5 members, they would then elect their national board reps. Each local station, and this is true with all the bylaws process, each local station will elect 3 listener and 1 staff rep. The local board will elect these 4 people.
Using proportional representation.
Using proportional representation voting for the 3 and using instant runoff voting for the 1 staff rep. These are proportional representation voting is incorporated in all the bylaw models and in some voting methodology that you may be familiar with. I don't know. It's been used in South Africa, Cambridge, Ireland, New York City schools, all over the world as an effective means for obtaining relatively broad representational bodies. The local board will elect the national. If the national committee of inclusion decided that the national board has elected,
I've been trying to ask for you to finish it up.
I'm about to wrap it up.
Yeah. All right, because you just keep going.
Someone else cover this.
You've been 16 minutes.
You already covered this.
Let someone else cover this. We have other speakers who know.
Listen,
this.
Since we ran over, I'll
just finish my sentence.
Thank you. But I want to do firm timekeeping for the remaining speakers. I suggest we move it up to 7 minutes since.
Because I'm sure everyone here, but maybe Mary knows this, that the national board is deemed by the COI not to be sufficiently diverse. And again, based on the COI's own determination of categories, demographics, and so forth, it could then trigger the mechanism whereby each local board then has to elect another 1 person, thereby increasing the national board another 5 seats. So each single area would have to add another person on, in the hopes that that would achieve a level of diversity. Those are the mechanisms in A. There's a lot of other stuff, and I have some paperwork on it. So, okay. Any questions, corrections, or ideas?
They'll come with that after.
Tom, are you okay with timing this and giving 7 minutes? Is that all right?
I have no problem with that.
Okay, this is going to shriek when 7 minutes starts.
Okay.